This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Welcome to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Hello, this is the 7 daily show where we talk all things science. Well done, clues in the name. Not just any old science, though, no. Just the most amazing, weird and deadly parts of the universe make it into this show. Now, my name is Dan, and today, as it's the first show of December, we're getting a bit Christmassy. We're finding out how Santa actually makes his sleigh fly. So we'll talk the science behind that magic in a little bit. Also, in this week's Dangerous Dan, we'll talk about the most violent storm in the universe. It's been raging for over 350 years, and it's almost twice the size of the Earth. And in a sec, we'll chat to a science expert on the phone, who's such a genius, he has but one name. He is like the pink of experiments. He's the blowfish, and he'll tell us why he's using music to make milkshakes in a little bit. First, it's time to catch up with our favourite inventor over at Fun Kids, Sir Sidney McSprocket. He's been knighted by the Queen for his services to incredible inventions as well. Today, it's all about something that you will use a lot of at this time of the year.
Sir Sidney McSprocket's everyday items, with the support from the Royal Commission for the 1851 exhibition.
Hello. It's lovely to see you back. I'm just making the final adjustment to a very special invention of mine. A biscuit frisket, no less. Now, you'll like this. Oh, now that wasn't supposed to happen. Never mind, more important matters at hand today. Now, I've successfully purchased a present for my wee niece Denise from Dumfries and rolled it carefully in bubble wrap for the post. It's a balloon that plays a tune. Still playing its tune, I see. Hope the batteries hold out. I just need to add some lovely birthday wrapping paper. Here it is. There, just folding it around the present. I can see a problem at hand. The paper will fall off if it's not secured. Now, what can I use to keep it in place? I've some string here. Perhaps I could use this to secure the wrapping paper. Quite a lot of string in here, and it looks like it's in a bit of a knot. Oh, what a tangle. Though I don't have time to unravel it all. I need something simpler than that. Oh, something like this. Sticky tape. Marvellous. Sticky tape is a super useful invention that you find in almost every house. You know the stuff. It comes on a roll and it's smooth on one side and sticky on the other. The roll makes it easy to peel off just the amount you need. Now, whilst I get this wrapping paper in place, let's see what the patented future scrutineer has to say about this extremely useful everyday item. Works up a sweat, I can tell you.
The technical term for sticky tape is pressure-sensitive tape. This is because to stick it down, all you need to do is press it. The very first sticky tapes were made as far back as 1845 by a Dr. Horace Day.
We think of sticky tape as useful for present wrapping or perhaps anti-crafty things, but it's used in hospitals, in factories and in shops. In fact, that's where it was first used in any great quantities.
One most famous of all household tapes, Scotch tape, was made by an engineer called Richard Drew in 1930. He designed it for food packaging.
But the 1930s saw a time called the Depression, and many people in America were very poor. They started to use this handy tape in all manner of ways.
People started using Scotch tape for repairing books, fixing broken household objects like toys and window shades, and many other purposes around the home.
Always sensible to make do and mend before you go buying anything new. Saves you pennies. And there's a lesson for any young inventors. Maybe your invention can be used in many different ways to what you'd planned.
In 1932, an engineer called John Borden invented a first tape dispenser with a built-in blade.
Oh, I could certainly do with one of them, as it can be tricky to find the end. Oh, there. As you can see, it's helped me to beautifully trim the balloon that plays a tune. Just one last piece, I think. Yeah, that should do it. Now my present is perfectly wrapped and ready to go. Oh, will you look at the clock? It's time for a tea cake. No, tutty bye for now, everyone. Oh, I hope I didn't overdo the tape there. Oh, well, better safe than sorry.
So Sydney McSprocket's Everyday Items, with the support from the Royal Commission for the 1851 exhibition.
We've got more from Sir Sydney McSprocket that you can catch up on for free on your phone or tablet. Get to the Fun Kids app, have a listen at iTunes, and you can get them all over at funkidslive.com. Now we'll find out the science behind making milkshakes with music in just a sec. First, I want to say a huge hello to Ainsley. She is 10. She's listening to the Fun Kids Science Weekly all the way in America. Amazing. It's what I love about science is that, you know, it's the same for everyone all over the globe. Everyone's fascinated and connected by what else they're finding so amazing about the world that we live on. Now, Ainsley has sent a message over to my page at funkidslive.com. She's got a question. She says, why do you get sick? I mean, I get sick, Ainsley, when my dad tries to make dinner for once, or when my mum tries to dye her hair and she comes down from the bathroom with a black mop on her head looking like the Loch Ness Monster. Oh, you mean, why do people get sick? Right, it's a science question for our expert Tom, isn't it? I thought that was a little bit personal. Yeah, I don't know. Why do people get sick? What makes people want to get something out of their mouth so furiously? I'll make sure I ask Tom about that in the next few weeks. Thanks for getting in touch. Now, Ainsley, send that over to funkidslive.com. Another brilliant way that you can get in touch with the show is to leave a review of the Fun Kids Science Weekly on the iTunes podcast store. Just open up your phone or your tablet, find the show, leave us a review. 5 stars works really well, and leave your name on there as well so I know that you're listening on iTunes. Then next week, I might say hello to you. It is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, our special guest this week is the world's first heavy metal marine biologist, which is the best job title ever. The Blowfish uses rock music to make science fun, more interesting, and generally rock, really. He's on the phone now. Blowfish, how are you?
I'm very well, big man, and yourself?
I am brilliant, thanks, dude. Now, so tell me more. What did this way of exploring science using music, where did it come from for you?
Well, it was set up by the Big Bang, which are a STEM group that do these fantastic events across the UK, but they have a big fair in Birmingham from the 14th to the 17th of March. And so they wanted to sort of do something big and interesting to get people excited about it, because it's free to go. You can register and you can go for free, and there's loads of science stuff there, lots of interesting stuff there. And of course, if you want something big and pretty exciting, then you've got to call the Blowfish. And so that's what happened. And they had this idea of making milkshakes using sound. And, well, if you've not seen the video, you need to check it out because it's, well, it's pretty heavy metal.
So, Mr. Blowfish, talk to me more about why they came to you, the Blowfish. Why are you expertly qualified to make milkshakes using your music?
Because I'm the world's only heavy metal marine biologist. You know, you need a scientist, you need heavy metal. There is only the Blowfish. You can't go to anyone else. Also, I've got a massive guitar, which really helps in these kind of scenarios. Now, actually, for me, as I say, marine biology, so what we were looking at is the science of somatics, which is physics, which is not something I usually deal with unless it's tides and waves and all that kind of jazz. So it was quite interesting for me as well to actually see it all working there in front of me and actually being, you know, part of it. But the cool thing is the rock music milkshake mixer is going to be at the Big Bang Fair in Birmingham. So you can go and see it yourself and, you know, see rock music and milkshakes combined.
So let's talk about both sides of the coin then, as a rock musician and a marine biologist. What came first for you, Mr. Blowfish?
I think rock musician is probably pushing it. Keen amateur would be the nicest way to describe my terrible skills on guitar. I was into heavy metal from quite a young age, so that came first. But actually, I suppose I was into Fish even before then. I was mad keen on sharks and the ocean back when I was 7-8 years old. So I've always just loved the ocean, loved animals, but I didn't become a marine biologist until I went to university, and by that time I was already a pretty big heavy metal fan. So I started playing guitar first and then learnt marine biology, but I didn't get any better at guitar, but I did get a lot better at marine biology.
Now, being a marine biologist, I imagine, is a job that loads of people want to do, and it kind of seems out of reach a lot of the time. What's the most amazing thing that you've learned that made things we don't possibly know about what goes on under the sea?
There is just too much to tell you as far as marine biology is concerned. I would say probably the most amazing thing, but also when you think about it, the most obvious thing is actually it is the oceans that are in charge of this planet. It's the oceans that create our weather. It's the oceans that produce our climate. It's the oceans that produce the oxygen that we breathe. And we talk about the huge importance of trees on land. Of course we do. Trees are vitally important. But scientists estimate that the oceans could be making between 50 or 80% of the oxygen we breathe. And so we always forget. We always think that, you know, it's about the land, it's about trees and green grass and all that kind of stuff. But actually, without healthy oceans, it doesn't matter how good the land is, we're all going to be in a lot of trouble.
Right, let's talk about the milkshake music blender very quickly. So how is it work? Because I play guitar to a much worse standard than I'm sure yourself. What's going on when I play a chord on my guitar and I'm strumming the strings, then it goes down a little wire through the amp and then it's going out and it's making a milkshake through the speakers? Talk to me more about the science and the technology involved.
Well, actually, from the guitar through the pickups, through the cable into the amp, that's all fairly standard as far as electrics and all that kind of jazz is concerned. The interesting bit is when it actually hits the speaker, because sound, it's just waves of pressure. That's all it is. It's pulses of pressure. And if you put that pressure through a medium that we can visibly see, you can actually see the patterns it forms. Now, by that, I mean, if you're in the bath and you're having a lovely little bath and you slap the surface of the bath with the flat of your hand, loads of ripples come out. Now, believe it or not, that sound, you're seeing waves of pressure. That sound. So what we see here is by putting the speaker underneath the milk, which nice, you know, gloopy stuff, and then putting some, you know, some really meaty, metally chords through it, that speaker is moving, it's translating the electronic information into those pressure waves that we can visibly see. And the cool thing is that by adding a little bit of the milkshake powder as well, you can see just how quickly it mixes. You can see how quickly that sound energy can ripple out through the milkshake and just turn it into something delicious and sound good at the same time.
Do you think a particular band, a heavy metal band, is better at making milkshakes this way than another one, because possibly their music is a lot faster, it's a lot thrashier and louder?
Yeah, we tried, when we were playing with it, we tried lots of different things to see what was going to work. And we thought at first that maybe the low frequencies would work, because that would mean that the speaker would move up and down, creating those sound waves much slower than if it was a high frequency where it would have to move much quicker. And we thought, oh, well, then that's going to make big, big waves. But it didn't seem to work like that. Eventually, we found that some of the mid-range frequencies actually kind of worked the best. So realistically, if you turn that into heavy metal, it would probably be something like speed metal that would, you know, work the best for you. And who doesn't love a bit of speed metal?
Well, at the Fun Kid Science Weekly, Mayor, we're speed metal every day.
But without doubt, you know, your death metal, your black metal, your Scandinavian opera metal, that's not going to work. You need something fast and punchy.
It's a shame, because I was going to go home and make a milkshake listening to my Swedish opera skinhead metal, so I'm pretty devastated, but never mind. We can find out loads more about this. It's the We can find out loads more about this. It's thebigbangfair.co.uk. The Blowfish, thank you so much for coming on the show, man.
No problems, buddy, no problems. And hopefully I'll see some people there at the Big Bang Fair all having a very good time. Don't forget, it's from the 14th to the 17th of March. It's totally free to turn up, and all you need to do is get registered online.
Right, time for this week's Dangerous Dan there, where we look at the most evil, mean and deadly things in the whole universe. Today, it's all about the most violent storm in the solar system. Because if you head 588 million kilometres away from the Earth, through space, and you keep going, you'll come to the enormous gas giant planet Jupiter. And on there, you can see a storm that's been raging for over 350 years. Now, scientists call it a persistent zone of high pressure. It's a bit technical. They like to call it the giant red spot to you and me. The gas and the pressure in this gigantic storm, it whirls around quicker, 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 making what looks a bit like a hurricane. And you can actually see it. If you look at pictures of Jupiter, it's the thing in the middle that looks a bit like a paintbrush swirling through the mud. Imagine some blood going down a sink, spinning around the plug hole. That's kind of what the swirling red spot looks like. Now, what's strange is, even though it's called the red spot, scientists have been tracking this storm for centuries on Jupiter, and it's changed colour throughout. It's gone green, it's gone black. Right now, they think it's red because of all the sulphur that's hanging around the storm. An evil, stinking gas as well, sulphur is too. It's almost 1.5 times the size of the Earth, which means this whole storm is bigger than the planet you're standing on right now. And that, my friend, is dangerous. It is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. In a sec, we'll ask our science expert, Tom, one of the questions that you have sent into my page over at funkidslive.com. Today, it's all about the sun and its distance from where you're stood right now. First, we need to get some of the science behind the magic of Christmas. And today we're learning how Santa's sleigh really gets in the air.
Santa Maury's Science of Christmas.
Hello, Santa Maury here. You know, the one in charge of all the science and technology here at the North Pole. Now, I've been letting you in on some of Santa's sleigh secrets. But a sleek, light sleigh alone isn't quite enough. Simple physics dictates that a good flying sleigh is going to need some wings if you want to visit all the children of the world in one night. Not that sort of wings. More the type you'd see on an aeroplane. A sleigh needs wings because you have to develop lift to get off of the ground, just like a plane. To generate lift, you need to have more pressure going under than over the wings. We started by having a look at how aerospace companies do it. They design wings that are curved on top and flat on the bottom. That way, air flows faster over the top of the wings and slower underneath. And the faster air flows, the lower the air pressure, and so you get that much desired lift. This is called Bernoulli's theorem, and was discovered by a 16th century Swiss mathematician, Daniel Bernoulli. But let's just say someone else a little further to the north might have known about it centuries earlier. With a properly designed sleigh, all we then have to do is generate enough speed to get the lift needed to take off. Airplanes do it with powerful engines. The engines, of course, are very loud and might wake children up as Santa makes his rounds. That's where the reindeer come in, but more about them another time. Oh, and before I go, you might be asking, but where are the wings? You might think you've never seen wings on Santa's sleigh. Well, I'll let you into a little secret. They tuck in just above the runners and only come out at the very last minute. And when we're flying, well, of course, the whole sleigh becomes invisible anyway. But again, that's for another day.
Santa Maury's Science of Christmas, with support from the Institute of Physics, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and the Institution of Engineering and Technology. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Christmas.
Yeah, you can also find out loads more about the science behind Christmas on your phone or tablet. Get to iTunes and have a listen on the free Fun Kids app. Now, you know when your mum or your dad asks you to clean your room up, right, and you kind of roll your eyes, You throw your arms about from side to side and you make a huffing sound and complain so much that you just don't have to do it after a while, yeah? Well, you're really lucky with that, because NASA astronauts, they're trying to clear up the junk and the rubbish that they've left behind in space. And that's a bit bigger than your room. We'll talk more about that in just a sec. First, let's get one of your science questions answered then by our expert, Tom. We do it every single week. If you want to know anything about the world and the universe all around you, let me know. It could be a huge question about something like gravity, or it can be about something small like the hairs on your head. It can be as silly or as serious as you fancy. Just make it about science and send it to my page over at funkidslive.com. This week's question, Tom, comes from Matthew, who is 13, who asks, how far is the sun from our Earth?
So the distance of the Sun from the Earth is about 150 million kilometres. Now, from that number, and because we know the speed of light's constant, we can actually work out how long that light takes to get from the Sun to the Earth. And that number is about 8 minutes. So when you see the Sun, you're actually seeing the Sun 8 minutes ago.
So we're looking back in time.
We are. I would also point out, do not look directly at the sun.
So, I know this sounds ridiculous, but the strength of the sun, it must be so hot if we are 150 million kilometres away and we can still feel its heat.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful. And you've got to think that all the energy we have on the Earth comes directly from the sun.
Right, let's find out all the science that's been in the news this week. A mission that's been testing the best way to clean up space junk is getting ready for launch. The Remove Debris spacecraft is going to use a net in space and a harpoon to grab garbage and all the techno clutter that's been left there from all our space missions over the year. Also, scientists think that they found the first evidence of Julius Caesar's Roman invasion of Britain back in 54 BC. They found weapons and ditches in Kent, which is the place that they think the Romans landed, and it's given us a much better idea of what happened all that time ago. And there's another reason why trophy hunting, which is killing wild animals for sport, is awful, right? Hunting the big animals that stand out from the crowd, which is what people do because of their massive, beautiful horns, their luscious, bright manes. Well, picking on those animals, it could lead to the extinction of them and take out all of the good genes from the wildlife gene pool, which isn't good. Right, let's get some good news up in here after that, I think. Time to catch up with our Fun Kid Science Weekly genius, our favourite one, Professor Hallux, who's talking about what keeps you on your feet.
Professor Hallux's heartbeat.
How's Boddy getting on, Professor?
Well, he's coping pretty well without his heart for now. I've connected him up to the computer to keep him going.
Is that such a great idea?
I'm not sure. He seems to have smashed my top score on Cheese Weasels, and that took me ages. Annoying.
Well, all the more reason to get his new heart finished. Lab coats at the ready.
So how does your heart work? Beautifully simple. Remember what the inside of the heart looks like? It's got four spaces, called chambers. Two are at the top and two at the bottom. They work together to squeeze blood around your body.
You can feel this pumping by feeling your pulse. Place two fingers on the side of your neck or on your wrist. Every pulse beat is a pump.
And it's a really powerful pump. Your heart beats over 100,000 times every day, pumping 7,200 litres of blood, enough to fill a paddling pool. Though I don't think it would be that nice to paddle in a paddling pool of blood. Yuck!
But why do we need blood, you may ask? Well, blood's most important job is to pick up oxygen from our lungs and carry it around the body to every cell and organ. It's like a high-speed delivery service.
Parcel for you.
Much faster than the postman. The heart can pump blood around your body in less than a minute. So how does it travel so fast?
Well, if you've been on a motorway in a car or gone up on an escalator, you'll know that when everyone is going the same way, you can go much faster.
In the same way, our arteries, veins and capillaries all carry blood in one direction and one direction only. Not that one direction. To stop blood going backwards, your heart has strong valves on the entries and exits. Valves are like heavy doors that only open one way. If you've ever been sat on a public toilet without a lock, you might have found the doors keep swinging in as people push it. What do? You shove your foot out and hold it closed so no one can come in without your say-so. That's a bit like a valve.
A one-way door. I said one way, not one direction.
Of course, things can go wrong with a heart, and the valves are a part that can be affected.
Did you know that when a doctor listens to your heartbeat with a stethoscope, he's actually listening to the noise of heart valves snapping shut? Sometimes the valves don't work quite as well as they should. It can be caused by an infection or getting older, and sometimes people are just born with faulty valves. They might be fine to be left alone, maybe treated with medicine, but sometimes an operation may help the heart to work more efficiently.
Thanks, nurse. Now, Body is lucky because we can make him a new heart in our laboratory. It's not quite as easy to replace human hearts. So here's a tip. Make sure you keep your ticker in top shape.
Ticker tip.
Today's ticker tip is have a healthy diet. They say you are what you eat. Well, maybe we should add, your heart is as good as the food you give it. What you eat and drink has a great influence on your heart's health. Too much fat can congest the vessels supplying the heart and the network of arteries and veins around your body, making it harder to deliver the precious oxygen. What's more, a healthy diet will help you keep to a healthy weight. If you are overweight, you are more likely to have things like raised cholesterol, which can be bad for the heart.
Thanks, nurse. All that talk of food has made me hungry. A crunchy apple for me. See you later.
Professor Hallux's Heartbeat, funded thanks to a Heart Research UK Healthy Heart Grant. Find out more and get hands-on at funkidslive.com/Hallux.
You can get all of Professor Hallux's adventures for free on your phone or tablet. Get to iTunes, get to the Fun Kids app, and you can have a listen at funkidslive.com. That is it then for another hair-raising and jaw-dropping edition of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Remember, you make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes. And while you're there, you can get all of our brilliant Fun Kids Science series. They're on there. They're on all your favourite podcast providers as well, wherever you get them from. You can also hear them on the free Fun Kids app and over at funkidslive.com. And on the website, it's a brilliant way that you can hear Fun Kids all over the country. You can also get us on the free Fun Kids app, and you can hear us or wherever you are on your DAB digital radio.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.